From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on, a Hollywood producer is looking for earthbound ETs. You could be one of them. And later tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Well, this could be an interesting weekend as the U.S. State Department has issued a global travel alert because of an unspecified Al-Qaeda threat. In a statement, the department said the potential for an attack was particularly strong in the Middle East and North Africa. It comes shortly after the U.S. announced that nearly two dozen embassies and consulates would be shut down on Sunday. The alert expires on August 31st. We don't know why. Taylor Farms of Mexico, a division of a California-based produce supplier whose greens go to national restaurants including Red Lobster and Olive Garden, shipped parasite-tainted salad mix that has now sickened hundreds in Nebraska and Iowa. And the Food and Drug Administration did not say whether the same bagged salad is tied to that outbreak that has sickened at least 400 people now in 16 U.S. states. And a fungus that spreads to a deadly disease that has killed almost 7 million bats in the U.S. is continuing to spread westwards. Officials say the disease has been confirmed now in Arkansas after samples tested positive for the fungus known to cause white nose syndrome, where all these bats are dying. To date, no vaccine against this disease. Today's high-end televisions are almost equipped with smart PC-like features, including internet connectivity, apps, microphones, cameras, but a recently discovered security hole in some Samsung smart TVs shows that many of these bells and whistles aren't ready for prime time. As a matter of fact, hackers, while you're watching TV, have been able to hack into the TV and watch you. Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, this is an unbelievable story.
Yeah, I mean, you'll recall the old scare stories from many years ago about, you know, people were, when TVs first came out,
yeah,
they were concerned that they were being watched.
Johnny Carson could look at your feet or
exactly.
Something like that.
Exactly, and of course now it's really happening. What's actually going on is that the TVs are gaining the same capabilities as PCs, as you said. So just as we have webcams on our computers, we're now starting to see cameras and microphones on the TVs, on game boxes. There's been some controversy about a new Microsoft game box because it has a camera also. And we were reaching a point now where security flaws, which have been there all along in most of these cases, because a lot of these systems just have just crummy security to start with, are gaining more capabilities. And unfortunately, when you're talking about some of these cameras and such, because they're software controlled, sometimes even when they'll have a red light that is supposed to light when the camera is active, it's actually sometimes possible for them to be activated without lighting the red light. So really, you do end up in the situation. I mean, it was kind of funny because Samsung was saying, well, you can always, you know, put some tape over the
lens. Yeah, exactly. Now, they say they've upgraded with software to all those owners of those affected TVs. I hope so, Lauren.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ones they could get at, certainly, and the bugs that they know about now. But I'll tell you, honestly, when these cameras first started coming out, webcams and such, they had shutters on them. I remember my first few had a little plastic shutter you could close. Now, of course, they have microphones on them, too, and they're much harder to cover up. But I still like the idea, if you're doing something private, of just covering up the webcam. And if you've got something even more private, you're concerned about the microphone, unplug it if you can.
Yeah,
now, if it's built in a TV, that's a lot tougher.
That's the smartest way. Lauren, thanks so much. The face of acne is getting a lot younger. Dermatologists across the country are saying that they're beginning to see now more pediatric acne in kids as young as 7 years old. They believe that hormones and all these other things are causing kids to grow a little quicker. A new study from the Pew Research finds that 36% of young adults aged 18 to 31 are living at their parents' homes. It's the highest number in four decades. A record 21.6 million young adults were still living at home last year. Of course, a lot of it, the economy. Dr. Peter Bragan with us. Peter, how emotional is it when the kids move back in with the parents?
Oh, you know, it's enormously disruptive, obviously, George, and it causes people in the family a lot of new problems to deal with. But I want to point out something else that's being ignored, which is absolutely catastrophic in these numbers, because that in, those increases are a few percentage points. But what is happening is that the formation of households is being destroyed. Back in 68, according to the same data, 1968, 56% of this age group of 18 to 31 was living with a spouse and married in a normal kind of a household. It's down to 27%.
Wow, that's huge.
That's huge, less than half. And then if you look at what's happening with unusual formations of relationships, not just living at home, but if you look at people who have a roommate, living with a roommate, or a child, or cohabitating, and also living alone, the figure goes up 5 or 6 times.
Well, and I think, Peter, it's going to be happening at a record-setting pace. It's not going to go down. It's going to keep going the way it's been. One of my favorite singers, legendary singer-songwriter, Engelbert Humperdinck, who started his recording career back in 1958, he has remained at the top of his profession for more than 45 years, selling more than, get this, 150 million records worldwide, 4 Grammy nominations, a Golden Globe for Entertainer of the Year back in 88, 63 gold, 24 platinum records, a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Engelbert has truly cemented his name in the music industry, has earned his reputation as the ultimate performer. And you know what? He's still going strong. He's going to be in the Los Angeles area this weekend, and we've got him on for a few minutes. Mr. Humperdinck, how are you?
George, I'm great, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
I've got to tell you, I have listened to your music for years. You continue to just make people not only happy, but, I mean, your entertainment value worldwide, which is what this show does, is just unbelievable. It's magnificent. What keeps you going?
I just love the industry. I love what I do. I love to sing. I love to entertain. And it's just a great creative business. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey for me. And I hope it never ends, you know. And I'm happy to be in the Los Angeles area.
Well, you still drive people wild at your events and your concerts. And you were, I think, the long sideburns, the flashy clothes when you started. You did that before Elvis Presley did.
Yes. Well, I got the sideburns going anyway. But that was it. I brought it here. And then, and people used to make fun of it, you know, like in the early days, you know, when Johnny Carson would say, make fun of my sideburns. You know, he looks as though he's on the phone, you know, all the time. Things like that.
You were born Arnold George Dorsey. How did you get the name Engelbert Humperdinck?
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to do something to try and get people to notice me, you know. And my first manager, he gave me that name. And you know what? It really did me a good turn because, you know, I know people had a problem pronouncing it in the early years, but now they've got to have the hang of it.
Well, you know what? Everybody knows. You know, I've been telling people all day you're going to be on the show for a few moments, and they all love you, and they all know the name. So it worked for you.
It did work, yeah. Thank you very much.
You've got a new album coming out called Release Me. It's the best of your works. And also for those people who are in the Los Angeles area, you are going to be playing at the Starlight Bowl in Burbank, California on the 4th, on Sunday. So this is exciting.
You know, George, I've been working on a new CD as well, you know, a duet album I want to talk about. And I sent letters out to all my friends who I've admired for many years, and I had great response, and it's almost finished. It's taken a year and a half. But there are people like, you know, Elton John and Willie Nelson and Smokey Robinson, Kenny Rogers, and many more. And Gene Simmons, too, is going to do this, my album.
That's exciting. I go around the country, Engelbert, speaking, and I was in Toronto several weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I do some little singing myself, not in your category at all, but I have been watching you sing on YouTube, Love Me With All Your Heart, for the last 6 months so I could learn the words. And I sang that song up there in Toronto at a theater. And it was great. And good luck. You've got your concert coming up Sunday in Burbank. Your website, by the way, is engelbert.com, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Okay, and you can get tickets there. And I hope everybody comes out to see you.
Thank you so much, George.
All right, Engelbert Humperdinck, just one of the stars of all time. A 10-year-old German boy
has found what appears to be a mummy in the corner of his grandmother's attic. I kid you not. The mummy was inside a sarcophagus complete with Egyptian-style hieroglyphic writings packed in a wooden crate. Now, it's unclear whether the bandaged item found by him is a genuine relic from ancient Egypt. Well, you talk about a discovery. Oh, my. Up next, Rebecca Pittman joins us. The history and haunting of the Stanley Hotel. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Rebecca Pittman. She's a model, 6 feet, 2 inches, a tall model, just happens to love unsolved mysteries. For more than 35 years, she has painted wall murals across the country and written books on subjects as diverse as business books for artists. And now she is into the haunting of America's most haunted venues. And let's bring Rebecca on. Hey, Rebecca, how are you?
George, I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm looking forward to this. This is a great story how we got you on this program. I'm doing a feature every month where our Coast to Coast insiders can call me on a special private phone. And one of your friends and fans called me and said, you got to get her on. And I said, who's she? And he went on to tell me, and lo and behold, here you are.
Here I am. I'm sending him brownies in the morning.
I love it. And he seemed to emphasize that you're a model and you're 6 feet, 2 inches tall, which I guess is pretty standard for a model, isn't it? Or is that tall?
That's still pretty tall. My mother taught modeling, and I think the average was 5'9", 5'10". But I can hook it in from the middle of a basketball court, so I've got skills.
In high heels, you're about 6'6", then, right?
I can be intimidating, George.
Okay, how did you get interested in hauntings, from going from murals to modeling to hauntings?
I live 35 minutes from the Stanley Hotel, and I would be up there twice a month, and it's just fascinating. There wasn't really a comprehensive book written about the history of Estes Park, the hotel. And then you have Stephen King being inspired to write The Shining after staying there. It was just too good to pass up.
I know. It's in Colorado. It's in a beautiful area nestled in the Rocky Mountains, isn't it?
Oh, it's drop-dead gorgeous. The views of the Rockies from the Stanley Hotel veranda are unparalleled. It's just stunning.
Now, let's get into some of this tie-in with some of the things you've done with paintings, for example. Tell me about these murals.
Oh, my goodness. I've been painting wall murals across the country for 35 years, and in some celebrity homes, it's been very, very good to me. And actually, when the owner of the Stanley gave me permission to write about the book, he made me a deal and said, I'll put you up in the hotel for a week if you will touch up the lobby where the luggage has nicked all the walls.
I love it.
So that's what I did.
All right, so what do the murals look like?
Oh, anything and everything. Whatever somebody wants, I paint. If I'm in Florida, it's usually aquatic. Colorado is obviously big for wildlife. It just depends.
How long does it take?
Oh, it just depends. My longest wall was 50 feet long. I don't know.
Okay, now the first book was The Haunting of the Stanley Hotel, right?
The History and Haunting of the Stanley Hotel.
Uh-huh. So that was the very first one. Now tell me about that hotel. You spent some time there. Did you see anything? Did anything scare you?
That's the thing. It's, you know, once, I don't know if you've had ghostly encounters, but once you have it and you can't explain it away anymore, you can't close your mind again. And yes, every day I was there, things were happening. And it wasn't just to me. I would be with a group of people and have something happen to where we all just stopped dead and went, oh, my gosh. It's an amazing place. The history is incredible about F.O. Stanley, the Stanley Steamer, and all of it. But yes, I had Lord Dunraven's known to haunt the fourth floor, and there were 8 of us walking along that floor. It was November. It was the off season, so there was no one up there. And suddenly this cloud of cherry blend tobacco smoke just blew into our faces like somebody just taken a draw on a pipe and just blew it into your face. And we all stopped talking, and a couple of us kind of gagged. It was so strong. And then it just dissipated. I mean, it was just gone like a faucet. It didn't fade away like, you know, that kind of an odor normally would. And there was no one there. And Lord Dunraven was known for smoking that type of pipe tobacco.
And you also wrote a book, The History and Haunting of the Myrtles Plantation. Tell me about that.
The Myrtles is in St. Francisville, Louisiana. It's a 217-year-old plantation that's now a bed and breakfast. The Civil War went through there, murders, voodoo, pirates. I mean, it has it all. And I did stay 5 nights there altogether. I've had things pull the blankets off of me, my earrings move down a mantle. It's not for the faint of heart, some of these places.
No, and I've got a lot of familiarity with another one of your works, The History and Haunting of the Lemp Mansion.
I understand you're from St. Louis.
Yeah, and for those who do not know what the Lemp Mansion is, it's still there. It was owned by a brewery family, not the folks from Anheuser-Busch, but a number of them. It was the Lemp Brewery. They made beer, and I think three of them committed suicide or died strangely in that house, didn't they?
Well, four members of the family killed themselves by gunshot. Three were in that mansion. The daughter who shot herself in the heart lived in her own big home
right down the street.
So four of them family members shot themselves.
They opened the place up, Rebecca, in St. Louis during Halloween.
Oh, joy.
And they have events there. And I got to tell you, an interesting story. There was a group of people wanted to go there for dinner because they served dinner there. And there was one guy there just whining and complaining that the place wasn't haunted, that this is a scam. Why am I here? And his friends kept saying, would you be quiet? Enjoy yourself. This is neat. It's scary. It's spooky. And he kept whining during the entire dinner. He had his hands under the table on his lap. All right, he'd gesture and he put his hands back under the table. He took his hands out after he had whined apparently too much. Both his hands were covered with butter. And
Oh my God. He
didn't do it. He had no idea what happened. And the people at the table surmise that some ghost at the Lemp Mansion just got ticked off hearing enough of this. And put butter all over it. It was unbelievable.
That's, to be honest, of all the places I've stayed in, and all of the books I write are in the top 10 most haunted venues, Lemp Mansion had more back-to-back haunted stuff going on. I had something sit on my feet, on my bed, something kick the bed. The scariest one for me was the last person to kill themselves in the mansion, shot himself. He shot his dog first, because he didn't want to leave it there alone, and then he shot himself. And my last morning there at 5 in the morning, I heard two gunshots so loud outside my bedroom door on the second floor of the mansion that I just jumped. And then it was like two gunshots, bang, bang, and then you heard this giant dog go, whoop, and my blood went cold. I mean, that was my first real residual haunting where it was like a tape, a loop from the past, and that got to me.
We're with Rebecca Pittman. Her website is perceptionmind.com.
No, it's actually Perception 9, the number 9.
Oh, 9. Okay, yeah, we've got you. No wonder I can't get to you.
Well, all of these books are on Facebook. It's The History and Haunting of the Stanley Hotel, Myrtle's Plantation, Lizzie Borden, and Lemp Mansion. They all have their own Facebook.
Okay, we'll make sure that our webmaster, Tim, tonight
makes that change. And they're all on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. They're everywhere.
All right, super. Now, were you always a believer in ghosts?
I've always thought we're terribly conceited to think that we know it all, whether it's UFOs or whatever. I mean, for Pete's sake, I guess the answer is yes, because my mother had some psychic abilities that I witnessed when I was young. I knew there was something more than what we typically see every day. It took going to the Stanley Hotel and having actual experiences for me to realize this exists. This is not somebody trying to get ratings for a TV show or pixie dust. There's something going on.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Exactly.
A lot of people.
Isn't it cool, though? It's neat.
Yeah, and they come up with a lot of theories of what it might be and what's out there. But, you know, when you think back about just why are we here and how did we get here, you have to believe that, all right, maybe the other side truly does exist. It's all part and parcel of the same thing, isn't it?
Well, I believe, and I interviewed Lloyd Auerbach, who's the world's foremost expert on ghosts and poltergeists.
Sure is.
You know who he is. He was very much a part of both of my first two books, and we talked about that. And we know that our human beings are 99.9% energy and light, and you can't destroy energy.
Let's talk more about that, Rebecca, when we come back. Energy and light, no doubt. We'll be back. We want you to share some of your ghost stories next hour. Rebecca Pittman with us, author. Rebecca, we were talking about how, you know, we humans are merely energy, and there's no reason why when we die, that energy, of course, doesn't dissipate. I just think it just floats to the other side, don't you?
Well, it floats somewhere. It has to. I don't know. To be honest, George, I feel sorry for ghosts. I think they try to communicate with us with the only means available to them, which is usually interacting with electromagnetic fields or energy in a room. That's why lights flicker, TVs go crazy, and, you know, electronic things tend to malfunction. In all the places I've stayed, I've never felt threatened. I felt they were just trying to get our attention for whatever reason.
So you don't feel as if they tried to attack you?
No.
Or demons were there or anything like that?
No, and I hope I never have a demonic experience. No, I just feel they were trying to communicate. I feel sorry for them.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
You never know. Now, you spend a lot of time researching the background of the places before you go. How long do you work at that?
Usually a year.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, Louisiana. I flew back three different times to research the archives, but it's my favorite part. I feel like Nancy Drew, especially when I uncover something that even the venue owners didn't know about. You know, if I find a map or a floor plan they hadn't seen and they get all excited, that's very cool. I love that part.
Rebecca, why do you think people are so obsessed with ghosts and hauntings and stories like that?
You know, does it feel to you that it's overly saturated all of a sudden? It's like there's a new
there's a lot.
Show every month.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Do you remember when the spooky shows would only come out on Halloween, and now they're every month, the movies? I mean, I remember when they'd only come out for Halloween, and now we have some kind of supernatural movie premiering every month almost.
I think so, too. Well, you know, first of all, it's inexpensive programming. It's reality-driven, and, you know, maybe that's what's pushing a lot of this as well.
I think maybe because we have gone through a hard time with the recession. We've gone through a hard time with a lot of things here in America, and a wake-up call with 9/11.
Yeah.
There's a part of us that maybe is hoping there's something more, that there's something esoteric or a little intangible that keeps our hopes up. I like the mystery. I hope we never solve all the mysteries out there.
Well, you know, there's no question, of course, that hauntings occur at places where people have died and they just don't let go.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. Have you ever been to a place that's been haunted, but nobody ever died there?
Not that I'm aware
of. No, I can't remember these.
No, not that I'm aware of. I'll tell you something interesting, and you've probably already heard this, but the castles, for instance, in England, scientists have found that a lot of the stone had flintstone in it and had quartz, and that quartz, as we know, acts as a transmitter or whatever in radios. They believe that some of the ghosts that are seen, and these are residuals, where you'll see a monk walking the grounds the same way every night, and he'll disappear at the same place. They don't interact with people. It's like watching a loop. They believe that somebody, when they died in a traumatic way, that energy was captured in the quartz and replayed back, just like a motion picture, like a signal being sent out from a radio. And I found that totally fascinating.
I think so, too. And all the places that you haven't been to yet, where would you like to go?
I've been asked to write a book on Chillingham Castle in England, which has been called the most haunted castle, but frankly, the torture chamber, I'm probably too sentimental to see all of those things that cause so much anguish. I don't know if I'm up for that one.
That would be an interesting take, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Actually, the Lizzie Borden house I'm writing a book about,
Ooh.
And that has fascinated me since junior high. It's still considered the biggest unsolved murder mystery in America, and I am looking forward
to
that.
Yeah, she got off in the trial.
Yes.
And, you know, when I was a kid, I thought she was convicted. You know, everybody would sing the songs and everything. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her, you know, and all that. But she got off. So I mean, what did the defense try to prove? I mean, who killed the mother and father?
They never found out. Lizzie went to her grave with people believing she did it. It's just that back in the late 1800s, it was unheard of for a woman in that time period who were supposed to be meek and protected and dainty to hack her stepmother and father to death with an axe. If a woman were to do that today, it's heinous. I mean, how many women would resort to an axe, 18 blows to her stepmother, 10 to her dad? I mean, even today, that would be shocking behavior. And back then, it was unheard of.
Well, there's no doubt. But, I mean, did the defense, try to create an image that somebody broke into the house and killed them? Or what was the defense push?
They were supposed to be a stranger that was seen out front loitering, that his buggy was parked out front at the time of the murders and that kind of thing. They tried to deflect it. But there were so many things that she claimed happened that they could never prove, including a note that was supposed to have arrived for her stepmother. She told everyone that her stepmother got a note and went out. They never found anybody that sent the note. In a town that size, you'd think they'd have found someone say, well, yeah, I did send the stepmother a note. That was her excuse of why her stepmother wasn't around, and then they found her butchered upstairs in the guest room.
Did she continue to live in that house after the murders and after the trial?
No, she and her sister stayed there 6 months after she was acquitted, but they moved up to the prestigious part of Fall River called The Hill, where Lizzie had always wanted to live, and bought what was considered a mansion back then with their inheritance.
Oh, my God. Did she ever get married or anything like
that? No, bless her heart. Her sister didn't either. Her sister was 10 years older. They both died spinsters. And the interesting thing was they died 9 days apart.
That is strange. But whoever would have married Lizzie, you'd have to sleep with one eye open. You know what?
I think her Christmas invitation list went down after that. But
I think so, too. And what was the time period when that happened?
1888.
Okay, so they had newspapers then, right?
Oh, yes. In fact, it was only 4 years after Jack the Ripper was terrorizing England that happened.
So
people wondered if that gave her the idea that he was out slashing people.
Well, that's a good question. What kind of hauntings have gone on at that house?
The room where Abby Borden was found murdered.
That's the mother.
That's the mother. She was rather a large woman. And people staying in that room have claimed to see all of a sudden a huge indentation laying on the bed, like a very large person laying there. There's noises as usual. Some apparitions in the basement. Some people have claimed they've seen Lizzie floating across the cellar floor.
Oh, geez.
Things like that.
Unbelievable stuff. And have you looked at haunted places beyond England in other countries?
No, but I'd sure love to.
I bet they're everywhere.
Edinburgh would be, Edinburgh Castle would be amazing. My ancestry's from Wales, so that would be really, really neat. And I may do Chillingham. To be honest, George, I don't want to spend the night alone anymore in these places. From now on, I'm taking somebody with me.
Well, you're a 6'2" model. I don't think you'd be alone.
Oh, thank you. Well, so far the ghosts have behaved themselves. But, it's just, like I've picked up EVPs on tape recorders, and that's very eerie to know that
it sure is.
Something was standing there that you didn't hear audibly. But then you hear it later, and you go, oh, my gosh, it must have been standing right next to me, and I didn't know it.
Well, and the EVPs of children, I find that to be very eerie.
It is, isn't it? The sing-songy voices, it's sad, but it does. It sends chills up your arm.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's chilling. You know, you think of Chucky, that doll. But, you know, it is sad to hear a little kid, you know, saying things like, you know, mommy, and you can hear this. It's pretty distinctive, isn't it?
Yes, the Myrtles has a lot of that because so much of the yellow fever epidemic swept through there for so many years. There's at least 11 children that died in the Myrtles plantation it's 217 years old, and there's a lot of reports of children's voices in the old nursery on the second floor and stuff.
What kind of feedback do you get, Rebecca, on your works?
I've been very blessed. The History and Haunting of the Stanley Hotel is at its number one spot on Amazon with 5-star reviews, and the same for The History and Haunting of the Myrtle's Plantation. And the biggest comment I get is they appreciate how much research I've put into it, that by the time they've read the book, they feel like they've been there. And that's a huge compliment to me.
How long have you been doing this?
The first book came out in 2010.
Okay, so you're relatively new to this.
To this, yes. My other four books were on how to start businesses in the creative arts, and that was 2003, the first book came out.
How come you never approached us earlier to get on the show, or did you?
I did. You didn't answer me.
Would you send it to me?
I sent an email in.
When?
Oh, a long time ago, 4 years ago, three or 4 years ago.
I only get 1,500 a day.
I figured you were a tad busy.
You only sent one?
Well, yeah, I've been kind of busy.
Most people will send something like 10 times.
Oh, you know. Well, it was doing so well on its own. I mean, I love your show. And the gentleman you mentioned at the beginning of the show that told you about me, Gary is your biggest fan, believe me.
Oh, he's a great guy. I mean,
he goes nowhere in that car without listening to you.
He was so thrilled because, you know, I opened up this special phone line for Coast Insiders. These are people who, you know, want to have some added features to the program. And so they had the phone number, and I opened it up at 3:00 Pacific time. And he was one of the first to get through.
Oh.
And I mean, he was in shock that I answered the phone. And I went, "No, this is what we're doing. Hi, how are you?" And then he didn't know what to say. And then he got into it and mentioned you and all your works and things like that. And I said, "Look, I've not heard of her. I mean, how could she have these kind of ghost stories out there? And we don't know about it." So I'm glad he did what he did.
New. I mean, 2010, and then the Myrtle's Plantation only came out last Halloween.
What's your favorite so far? Or they, as I say, I love them all.
To be honest, Limp Mansion. Did you go in there?
Oh, yeah, I've been in there, sure.
Don't you feel like when you walk through the door, it just wraps around you? It's kind of dark because there's a lot of stained glass windows.
Yeah. It's eerie, and you know, it's in South St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
It's old in that region. I mean, some of the structures in St. Louis are just magnificent, but this is an old mansion that had these incredible tragedies occur, and I mean, they play it up during Halloween. Believe me.
Oh, they played up big. Paul and his sister Patty that own it were so good to me and gave me an amazing tour. For the people who have not been there, there's actually a labyrinth of tunnels underground that led to caves where they had their own swimming pools and theaters underground.
It's a gorgeous house. I mean, if you like old, that's what it is.
It is old, and it's spooky.
It must. When do you think it was made? Do we have a date?
Oh, shoot. I think that's in the late 1800s as well.
Yeah.
It seems like all of these places were, except the Stanley. The Stanley opened in 1909. But I think it was 1872. Is that right?
Probably. I mean, the Beer family has been in St. Louis for years. And, you know, then things changed, consolidated. They went out of business. Who knows what happened? Anheuser-Busch family, of course, built up Anheuser-Busch to be a monster company, but that was since bought out by a different firm a few years ago. I mean, the brewery's still there, and the company.
Well, the Limps introduced lager beer to America.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, for a time, they were bigger than Anheuser-Busch. They were very good friends with the Busch family.
Competitive friends.
I'm sorry?
They were competitive friends.
Competitive friends, but they were good friends, and they were the social elite. I mean, of St. Louis. And so when the Prohibition hit and their fortune started dissipating, all of a sudden there was just a lot. There was also a death in the family that the father never really recovered from, of one of his sons, and he took his life. And
what caused them to do what they did in terms of taking
I think the Prohibition, the loss of fortune, I believe that there was some kind of depression going on in
curse.
The family.
Maybe a curse, too.
Well, you never know. But, you know, for a woman to shoot herself in the heart is very strange.
That's rare. That's very rare. Maybe she had.
Maybe, but for a woman to choose that way out, in fact, I believe, and I'm putting that in the book, that I believe that was an unsolved murder mystery. I don't think she killed herself.
Ah, a jilted lover, perhaps.
Well, her husband was in the bathroom and claimed he heard a gunshot, and they were having huge marital problems. So
he was never convicted either?
Nope.
Did they look at him as a suspect?
Not for long.
Have you been on the Haunted Queen Mary in Long Beach, California?
No, I want to.
That's another strange place. I've been there several times. Yeah, and it's weird. You have weird feelings there.
Did you hear anything?
You hear some creaking and crackling, but I mean, this is an old ship. But I didn't hear any voices or anything. But a lot of people claim they have.
Oh, it's the Whaley House. Have you been in there?
No, I haven't been there.
I want to check that out.
I was also in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, at the Eastern State Penitentiary.
Ooh,
that's scary.
Okay, I don't like going in those.
That is scary. I mean, beyond looking at Al Capone's cell, when he was before he went to Chicago to do his thing, mm-hmm. he was there on some concealed weapons charge. But I mean, that's an old place. It really is.
Well, in the Winchester Mystery House, I mean, you guys in California have some cool stuff.
Have you been to Shawshank in Ohio?
No.
That's another one. They're all strange places.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's almost too many to count. The only thing that I'll tell you I feel is distressing is because the paranormal can be big business for a venue because everybody's into ghost hunting now.
Yeah,
and I just hope that a lot of these places that are touting that, you know, they're haunted aren't doing it just to get people there. I know the places I've researched, like the Stanley and the Myrtles and Limp and all of that, they're definitely haunted. They deserve the titles they have. But like I said before, it's almost becoming overly saturated and turning it into a circus, which I find distressing.
I've got a friend in St. Louis, Jody Parks, and she goes to as many paranormal events and ghost hunts as she can put together. And she's got her own staff and crew that pop all over the place. And, you know,
she use all the EMF readers and all the fancy
She's got people who can do that.
Wow.
And, I mean, you talk about gutsy. I mean, she'll go into these places. She'll spend the night there. And, you know, I wouldn't do that.
Well, I have four grown sons, and my sixth grandchild is on their way, and they tease me.
Good for you. I've got six, too.
Do you? Isn't this the best time of life?
They're great.
But, you know, for your grandkids to go, yeah, my grandma's a ghost hunter, it's like, okay, I didn't start out to do this.
No, but I'm telling you, if you're at a party, Rebecca, and you tell people that you are a ghost author or hunter, you stop the place.
It is interesting. The book signings have been fun. I have to tell you very quickly, when I did the book signing at Barnes & Noble here in Fort Collins, which, again, is only about 35 minutes from the Stanley, one of my dearest friends is a Jack Nicholson Vegas impersonator. He looks and sounds exactly like him. So he came to my book signing at Barnes & Noble because of, you know, The Shining that Jack Nicholson was in.
Yeah.
People went crazy. It was I've been to see what a celebrity goes through. It was insane.
That's great. Well, you stay with us, Rebecca. We're coming back in a moment. We're going to spend an hour more with you as we take phone calls, perhaps stories and questions for you about many of the things you've done, including, of course, the history and the haunting of the Stanley Hotel and the history and haunting of the Myrtles Plantation. Rebecca's website, perception9.com, and it may be a little slow to get into because we're bombarding it. But we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.